Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor. Massive show today. We're going to try and crank through a ton of stuff.
Couple of interviews, too.
Oh, boy.
Great guests. Yeah. Friends of the show.
So I'm Ken Edwards with Midwest Coalition of Labor. Sitting to my right is Ed Maher, also with the MCL.
Hey.
And there is Phil Davidson with the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council.
Hi, Phil.
Good morning. Hello.
Phil. So let's get right to it, right? Big, huge win for labor. UAW smoked them in Tennessee.
Biggest
right?
in decades, they say, in the South.
Well, yeah. I mean, as the Department of Labor Secretary Sue said the other day, South is ready for unions. Anybody who thought different, you know, it's the world is changing.
You know what thing's different? The governor of Tennessee.
Yeah, well, I think
he
came out and said, they've made a terrible mistake. You know?
All these people are going to hate making more money.
Yeah, this is going to be horrible for them and the economy and the taxpayers. And what do you care at that point? Right?
You're a public official who's saying openly that you want your people to make less money.
Yeah, yes. Pretty much.
When Volkswagen's already said, we're okay with it. We're going to be neutral.
When the company's not fighting it, why are politicians fighting it?
Well, what happened to small government, right? What happened to government staying out of private sector business?
Mm-hmm. It's been replaced with government that wants you to make less money. I don't care what party you're in. Yeah. Do you want to make more money? The answer is always yes.
Well, here, let's get back to, and I know we're going to talk about this later, that governor, and I don't even know his name, and I don't particularly care, probably thinks that union equal Democrat. Right?
Yeah.
For some reason that once the union's in, those worker bees that are probably half Republican, if not more, are somehow going to magically become Democrats. That's not going to happen. And they just don't understand that. We need to do a better job, labor, of playing both sides of the aisle and making them understand that we're not the enemy. You know? And whatever. So
Do a better job of reaching out and understanding like the needs of the labor movement in the building trades and auto workers would be like, quit vilifying them for trying to fight for better wages and better benefits.
And later in the show, one of our guests, Jason George, coming in from the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 49, he's had a lot of experience and success dealing with both sides.
Where's he out of, Ed?
That's out of Minneapolis, St. Paul. They represent Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota.
That's three small states, very tiny.
Tiny little states.
Like Rhode Island.
You can hit like a solid golf shot across all three of them.
Yeah.
If you really get a hold of it.
You imagine like being like a business agent up there like, hey, what's your jurisdiction? These three states.
I'm on my way. I'll be there in 5 hours.
I'll be there next week.
Going as fast as I can.
And there's 14 snowstorms between here and there.
It'd be like the guy from Yellowstone. You have to have a chopper.
Yeah.
You just spend too much time watching TV.
We do have a lot of references.
I know, you really do. Mm-hmm. I need to start watching more TV. All right, so anyway.
You're so educated. Wow.
I'm not educated.
You were virtue signaling
virtue signaling. What is that?
I don't know. Talking about how you only read books at night.
Not the guy that sent us the email that said what an idiot I was and how I misled the public and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, that guy didn't really know what he was talking about.
No, and by the way, we're not above responding to...
What was his name again?
Chris.
Chris. If you're listening,
yeah, you're wrong.
Turn it off.
We're not above. We're really petty.
We're critic shamers.
Yeah, Chris, you're not the listener of the week. How about that? You're the anti-listener of the week.
That's exactly right.
So anyway, all right. And then I want to talk about something that just happened here in Chicago, and that is Foxtrot. It was like this fancy, what do you call it? Like a
convenience store, essentially.
Basically, like it's a high-end, you know, 7-11. Place where you can buy a $40 sandwich.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
And so they have 15 locations, and they make, you know, they were seemingly making a lot of money because they were always crowded.
They're popping up everywhere.
Right?
Yeah.
And what did they do? They closed. And we got 1 minute.
With no warning.
No warning. We just had this
spoke about the Warnack last week.
Last week with Karen Kent and what she did.
We could have saved their company. If
they would just listen to the show, they would know.
Yeah.
How do you not have lawyers?
Yeah, unbelievable.
Even I know about it. And sure enough, within a day, they got a class action lawsuit filed against them. And by the way, what happens in a class action lawsuit? They get attorney's fees, like crazy attorney's fees. So these workers don't have a Karen Kent. They don't have a Unite Here. They don't have a union that automatically just goes, boom, I'm going to court. We're going to take care of this. And Karen won, like, very quickly. Now they're going to be in litigation land. And unless the company...
pay out a lot in restitution, right?
But unless the company folds, it's going to be years.
We got to take a break. We've got two guests coming in. We have Stu Clark, the CEO of Premise Health, and Jason George coming in from the Operating Engineers Local 49. So stay with us. We got a great show coming up right here on WGN 720.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Workers' Mic here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher, here with Ken Edwards and Phil Davidson. And our guest today is Stu Clark, the CEO of Premise Health. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, guys.
Yeah, welcome.
How you doing, Stu?
Thanks for coming in.
It's always good to be here.
We've had a busy weekend.
No kidding,
We're coming off of another grand opening just yesterday out in Joliet, another health center for union members. That's for the Carpenters, the Mid-America Carpenters, and the Operating Engineers, Local 150. And it was quite an event. We had a heck of a turnout. So it's members are really excited about every new health center we open up. This is
I
the
can't tell you
one.
How many like Facebook posts or texts or emails, and I'm not making this up, that say, like, this is just fantastic. I had a guy, one of my former stewards from 150, he's like, well, up until Grace, like, I really hadn't gone to the doctor very often, And he's like, you put it right here. I went to the opening. Yeah. Sure enough, I was there. Now I'm going. And he's like, I really appreciate it, because otherwise, to be blunt, I probably wouldn't have gone.
Yeah, there's no excuse anymore. We cover every region now, right? North, south, west?
Yeah, I think so. We're opening up in
Utica. A couple weeks.
Right? And then I think, hopefully we'll continue to expand onwards and upwards, yeah?
Well, yeah, this health center in Joliet is located at a carpenter's hall. So,
that's right.
I mean, to your point, Ken, it gives people an opportunity and takes away any excuse from going to the doctor.
So let's talk big picture for a second. Premise Health, just a two-second overview of who you guys are.
You bet. We're what's called a direct healthcare company, which means we contract directly with large organizations, including unions. And so there's no middleman, if you will.
Right.
We are paid by the union to provide care directly to the members and their families.
Now, does that cut down cost?
Well, when you improve quality, it certainly cuts down on costs, but it also cuts out on a lot of the middleman costs,
that's
administrative
right.
costs.
Yes. Oh, so the answer is yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
No hesitation.
Yeah, yes. No. The answer is yes. So you guys contract directly, and then you build these doctor's offices, these clinics, et cetera, right?
That's
pharmacies
correct.
As well?
Yes, pharmacies, physical therapy. One of the biggest services right now is mental health.
Okay.
It's very much in demand. Here in Illinois, 22% of adults claim that they have anxiety or depression, and there's just no access.
Right.
Can't get in to see anybody.
That's for sure.
Let's. I just want to go backwards one more quick second. How many sites does Premise operate in the United States?
Close to 900 now.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, and Chicagoland is a really important market for us. As you all have mentioned, we're opening our fifth with MCL, but we have other trades here in Chicagoland
and
as well.
Any pushbacks, Stu, from like these hospital networks or places that tend or might lose revenue because of your model?
Well, maybe not directly, but the reality is that the more primary care you offer, the healthier the workforce and the less spend there is.
Right.
And the big spend comes from really the hospitals and the specialists. So if you're providing great primary care and you're keeping people out of the ERs and out of the hospital beds, you're hitting the revenue of the traditional healthcare system. So, I'm not getting holiday cards from these folks.
Well, you'll get one from the Workers' Mic, yes?
That's right.
Yeah. Let's pivot back to mental health for a second. You mentioned 22% of, where was that, Illinois, you said?
Yep.
Is that building trades, just all of Illinois?
All of Illinois.
That says they have some sort of anxiety, depression, what?
Yeah, name it, PTS.
Yeah. And then where does that stat come from?
That particular stat comes from the Kaiser Family Foundation.
Okay.
But we're also getting data that you'll hear me quote from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration.
Yeah.
As well as other third parties like Milliman that measure this. Let's look at it this way. If one out of five adults in this state have a self-declared condition
right.
and they can't get access, we have a major problem.
Yeah.
And as we've talked about before, you know, the trades in particular have been reluctant to talk about this issue.
The fact that we are now including behavioral health is like the big name for this in our clinics, right? And explain, Stu, what does that mean in plain English?
I don't know how you separate family medicine from mental health, right? We're doing damage to our bodies because of what's going on in our heads.
Yep.
And so the idea of going in to see your primary care doc who identifies that you have a mental health condition but then can't help you get to that specialist, you know, you're not really serving the patient well. So we made the decision, we're going to combine the two. So at the five MCL centers, for example, we have behavioral health staff in those centers. And if Ken comes in and our doc decides that Ken needs to have a consult, we're going to spend time with Ken to get him to walk down the hall with us and make that what we call warm transfer so that you can begin that conversation.
Can members receive therapy there on site from the behavioral health specialist?
Yeah, that's right, Phil. We can do individual, we can do group, we can do couples, and we can do family.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, all four.
I think the point that you made is the fact that somebody can be in there and, you know, get a checkup and say, how are you feeling?
Yeah.
You know, well, you know, I'm not sleeping well, or I've lost 25 pounds or whatever it is, right? And they can literally go, yeah, I think now's the time for a little check-in with Dr. Blank right down the hall. Go. And nobody knows that there's no big, giant, glaring sign that says, you know, I'm here for mental health. You know, they're going to the clinic. And wherever they go inside those doors is where they go. I think I've told you this, Stu. My mom is a social worker for eons, private practice and therapy, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I've read statistics about the amount of lost productivity and wages and things like that that members lose by, I can't get out of bed, right? I'm anxious. I got to go. I'm on a medicine that I can't operate heavy equipment on, right? Stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, how do we address that?
Yeah. I mean, according to Mercer, the big consulting firm, 62% of lost work days are tied to a mental health issue.
Wow.
I mean, that is an enormous number.
62%.
62%, according to Mercer.
And the other 38% is Super Bowl Monday.
Yeah.
Hey-o.
The blue flu.
The blue flu.
January 2nd.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, and look, this goes cross-section of the working world, right? It doesn't discriminate whether you're a white collar, blue collar, service industry. You know, you have what you have.
Yeah, and the other thing is that we know that folks who have an underlying condition, say hypertension, diabetes,
right,
obesity,
yeah,
and if they also are diagnosed with a mental health condition, their claims, and this is where it's important to the union fund to understand, their claims can be 3.5 times more expensive.
Why is that?
They don't take care of themselves.
Got it.
They're sedentary.
Yeah.
They're not compliant with their medication for their diabetes.
Right.
They could have social habits that are destructive and making their conditions worse.
Yeah.
All the above.
That makes sense.
And this is especially important for us, right? Because I believe that the building trades have the highest percentage of depression, I think, of any industry.
Is that right?
Yeah. And the suicide rate, correct? I think there was a study that came out.
I think police have a pretty high one. Lawyers certainly have a high one. But I know that especially during the pandemic, Phil, when our members were sitting at home, they have sat at home for that long.
Yeah, we're right up there because there was a big story about that. I think it was in the Times a couple months ago. We were talking on the show. And it is, as we talk about, it's such a struggle to get people from the building trades to embrace mental health and behavioral health. It's just, it's not part of the culture,
right.
And that's part of, you know, the role that I play and, you know, in my union of, like, helping members understand, like, it's okay. What's the saying? It's okay to not be okay.
Yeah,
and,
right, that's right.
I think you're starting to see a little bit of movement here, but there's a lot of room for improvement, you know?
At the end of COVID, there were some numbers that came out about the number of children that were struggling with depression, like teenage girls and boys that were struggling with depression.
Yeah.
And that was alarming at Local 150, certainly, and a big drive to try to expand mental health offerings. And when you can push out to your members, to these, you know, blue-collar, tough workers, that your kids might need some help, they can get their kids in there, see a positive change, and then it's like, well, okay, this isn't so scary.
Working
this
for them,
so
right?
Bad. It's so how are you, a ton
yeah,
of water.
The, yeah. So how are you seeing the usage, Stu? Like, are people using this benefit or not?
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of the most popular and highest utilized services, whether it's here in Chicagoland with the trades or whether it's with, you know, commercial clients around the country. A human's a human. Everybody's hurting. Mm-hmm. You know, the issue is access. I mean, even when a reasonable adult comes to terms with the fact that they need help, they have to take time off work. They have to go find the right therapist.
Oh,
and as we know, a lot of times your first interaction with that therapist isn't great. And so now you have to make time to go find a second one. It's not happening. And so in the situation with MCL and the trades here in Chicagoland, you know, having that therapist embedded in that center where there is a very short waiting time and it's very welcoming, we just make it easier for the members and the families to access and really get engaged.
The access, I think, is a really good point, because if you've ever looked for, you know, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, or family therapist, et cetera, A, they're not taking new patients. B, they don't take your insurance anymore, right? C, they don't take Medicare. Like, right, it's either cash or it's not happening. So here, you know, we have somebody that's literally in our building right down the hall. And like you said, Phil, that, like, you know, if we're putting doctor's offices within spitting distance of where everybody lives, then it really has no disincentive to not use this program. Right, Stu, does that make sense?
Absolutely. Look, I come from West Virginia, and we say it's a lot more, it's easier to get to a liquor store than it is to a mental health counselor.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It just never ends well.
Right.
Unless they address it. And addressing it is not an easy thing to do. Yeah. Just like drug and alcohol issues, they're not an easy thing to do.
That's right.
Yeah. And like, you know, you said, you know, you go back to the access for a quick second. I know that, you know, and I think in a few weeks we're going to have a business manager, Mike Bertolone, from the Operators from Ohio. But, you know, they created their own system, and we'll talk about that, where they are literally taking their members and going, okay, here is a social worker, and it's in this county, right? Each one of their counties has one, really unique and cool. More to talk about that. But the access here is like, hey guys, you know, if you or your wife, right, or your kid, doesn't have to be you, the member, right? It could be your spouse. Mm-hmm. Maybe she has postpartum or whatever.
Right.
Here's a place to go that, you know, you can talk to the doctor, right? You get medicine prescribed as well. Yes.
Absolutely. Yes.
So the behavioral health person, clinician, doctor, or psychologist?
Licensed clinical social worker in this case, but we also employ psychologists. Yes.
Okay. And a psychologist, neither one of them can write prescriptions, correct?
That's correct.
But they can work with your primary care physician who's 16 feet down the hall and
can
say,
write the script.
So-and-so needs, you know, blank medicine, right?
Yeah.
And there's really not a ton of excuse not to do it.
That's right. And I heard a story 2 weeks ago that really underscored to me how hard it is for some people to start. And it was with a customer in the Midwest, not Chicago, where the patient was being managed by one of our care managers, and the patient was overweight and depressed. And so literally the plan was, among other things, for the first week for this patient to pick out what show she was going to watch on her stationary bike. She had one job that week.
Right.
Pick out what show you're going to watch.
Yeah.
The next week is move your bike closer to the TV. And then the third week was get on it for 5 minutes on just Tuesday and Thursday.
That was it.
And now this patient is exercising every day.
That's awesome.
But it was surprising to me that you had to go that incrementally to get somebody to begin to exercise. And so it just underscores everybody's different. And if you don't have a specialized plan involving the doc and the counselor, because one size does not fit all.
Yeah. Sure. And that's what I think makes the difference between what you guys do and what the rest of the healthcare industry is doing. And Ed always says, you know, the doorknob, what do you call it? Doorknob medicine?
Yeah, door hanger medicine, I think.
Yeah, where the doctor's got his hand on the door and he's getting ready to, you know, you might see him for a minute, but what you guys are doing, right? I know. It's like, hey, I saw your blood pressure and everything looks great. See you in six months
later.
Or, yeah, whatever.
And that's part of the problem, right? Yeah, we don't get paid by the visit.
Exactly.
We get paid by the union fund to make people better.
Yes.
And if we don't make people healthier and help the union fund save money by spending money more efficiently, we get fired.
Right.
That is a very different economic model than everything else out in the medical
trying
community.
Trying to crank in as many appointments as you can, because whether it's 5 minutes or 20 minutes, you're getting paid.
Right. We want our providers spending as much time as they need to with every single patient. This doorknob medicine stuff is the reason that the American public is in such a bad way.
We've got insurance costs continue to escalate.
Exactly. They're unaffordable.
Yeah. All right, listen, thank you so much for coming in, Stu. It's really always a pleasure to talk to you and to listen to what Premise is doing to disrupt healthcare and what they're doing in the union space, especially for us. I don't really care about what you're doing for IBM. That's not true, I do.
They're not a client.
Yeah, oh, whatever. They should be.
You hear that, IBM?
Yeah, you hear that? You listening? How about Mercedes?
Maybe soon, once they get a union.
There you go.
Okay,
soon to be union Mercedes, UAW. I love it. See?
Finally, we can all go out and buy Mercedes.
I've always wanted to drive a foreign car. I really have. I've always wanted to drive one, but I can't. I can't even put myself in one.
You would
if I go to a car rental place, I
would
have to get a American car, right? is what it is. Anyway, Stu, why am I even talking about that? Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Listen, we'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megant Financial, Premis Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ken. There's Ed. There is Phil. And we are super stoked today to have the president, business manager, correct? Am I getting that right?
Financial secretary and business manager.
Don't ever correct me.
It's very different.
Say it again.
Financial secretary, business manager.
And you have a separate president.
Correct.
We are of course, talking to Jason George from the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 49, affectionately known as the 49ers.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's this football team that we get confused with. But
Nobody likes them, but everybody loves the 49ers, meaning you guys. So talk about a little bit about who you are.
So I'm from Minnesota, originally St. Paul, Minnesota. Kind of grew up with a single mom, kind of hard scrabble background. I got introduced to the labor movement through my uncle, actually, who was the president of the bus drivers union.
Oh, cool. Huh.
And he led one of the biggest strikes that they've ever had in Minnesota up there. So I got to kind of see that and watch him do that. And, you know, coming from where I'm from, wanted to kind of make a difference for working class people. And my uncle was always in my ear, like, if you want to do that, you got to get in the labor movement.
That's awesome.
So eventually found my way to it. And then
how? Like, where'd you get? Like, what'd you?
I got hired on originally in the labor movement as a political organizer for the Minneapolis AFL-CIO.
Okay.
And my job was to go to the most rural Republican counties in Minnesota, Wright County.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a ton of trades members that live there.
Sure.
Yep.
And we wanted to get active in local elections to make sure that their values are being represented on school boards and stuff. So we won a couple school board races, and that's kind of how I got my start. And then applied for a job at the operating engineers and got it. So I have a very untraditional background for a union leader in the trades.
Yeah, you do.
Didn't come from the job site like is almost always the case.
Didn't run equipment.
No.
Yeah.
I can a little bit, but I'm dangerous. It's not good. So I'm getting trained and,
sounds like
and
me with a hammer.
Doing a good job of that, right? But
yeah, Phil, you can't run the carpenter's equipment. You know, hammer.
You know, my members obviously.
What's a tape measure?
Right. My members obviously know that. You know, that's been when I ran for election the first time. That was the $1 million question. Like, you know, are they going to vote for somebody? You know, I didn't even know. I was like, you sure you want me to do this?
Yeah.
But
what made you run for president?
You know,
not president or business manager.
We had some things going on in our local that a lot of the members, you know, weren't real happy with, and, and I was approached by members and others to run. And
that's got to be an honor to be approached.
Yeah,
to run,
it is.
Right?
It's like, I was like, literally, are you sure?
Yeah,
me. But you know, it's worked out, and as we always joke about it now because it's kind of a settled issue. But they're like, we're not hiring you to operate equipment.
It's a good point.
We're hiring you to operate the union.
That's right. A good point.
And you're the perfect person for it. So
I like that. They always told me at 150 cool, that man. I'd never be an officer because I haven't run equipment. But I think that was just an excuse now that I think about it.
You know.
Yeah. Ed, care to comment?
I have nothing to say about that.
It's something that does happen quite, not often, but it's happened in other unions.
Yeah.
So it's not like totally unique. But in the operating engineers, I think I might be the only one. Like it's pretty unique.
I mean, for us, it is very unique. But to your point, I mean, you talked about reaching out to people in difficult geographic areas and persuading them. So you understand how to communicate with union members and how to speak to union members. And I think that's a big part of the success that I've always seen out of Local 49.
For sure.
Yeah. You know, the other thing about our membership, you know, might not have had a huge background in construction. Although, you know, I've done a few things here there, but like. My background is such that I'm just like these men and women. Like I know what it's like to have people call in your house looking for, you know, the bill collector.
Sure.
I mean, I couldn't do this if I was, you know, some college kid who never, you know, experienced anything in my life, right?
You know, like, interesting. It's interesting you say that. So you grew up with a single mom, right?
Yeah.
And what'd she do for a living?
She was lucky enough, thankfully for us, she got a job at 3M when she was 18.
Oh, awesome. Stayed there.
Yeah, forever.
Yeah.
For like 40 years.
Yeah, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I grew up a single mom as well. You know, watch a struggle fight, you know, to get where she's at today. But it took forever. And I agree with you. Like, I don't think I would be in my position if I, you know, grew up in a wealthy family, to be honest with you.
Nah, no way.
So But back to what Ed said, you know, your communication game, I think, is second to none in at least in the operators that I've seen. I know you know plenty of, like, you were the comms director for 150 giant local, right? How many members are in the 49ers?
We're at 15,000 now, yeah. And that's active members. It doesn't even include retirees.
Wow,
yeah. And that's across Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, you met, like,
an enormous chunk.
I got to drive a lot, put a lot of miles on. Yeah, that's yeah. Sure. Oh, yeah. A lot of windshield time.
And you're based out of the Twin Cities, you said.
My office is in the Twin Cities. Yeah, we have 7 or 8 offices all over those 3 states. I think actually 9.
But you imagine that, like, covering that amount of...
It's a wide swath.
Yeah, exactly. Swath, big word.
It feels good. It's a lot of fun driving from Minneapolis to Bismarck for 6 hours in January. It's a good time.
For sure, for a half-hour meeting or
right,
something like that.
Right.
But so you have pivoted over the last, you know, bunch of years, as I've seen, and you do video messaging, right?
Yeah.
And explain that. Like, what made you decide to do that? Just geography?
No. Actually, the younger generation.
Okay.
Like, so, you know, the older people in our union are also like, we got to get these men and women to come to union meetings. They got to come to union meetings. And just kind of lamenting the fact that, you know, fewer and fewer people are coming to union meetings.
Right.
You know, I'd love them to come to union meetings, too. And we do things to try to get them there.
For sure.
And we have pretty good turnout at our union meetings, and it's all good. But... I know, you know, being a little younger myself, you know, when I got the job, I was 41,
mm-hmm.
And I have kids, and I'm, you know, divorced, you know, dad, luckily got a great ex-wife who's a great mom. So there's no issues there, but, like, you know, it's
wait, hold on a second. You said something good about your ex-wife?
Yeah. Well,
I have no experience with that whatsoever. I don't understand.
I have no comment, just for the record, Your Honor.
I shouldn't be commenting either, to be honest with you.
No, it's good. There's one out there.
I do like that you said that you're divorced with kids. Like, you're like every other operator.
this guy's a real deal.
Actually, one of my staff members jokes around with me. He's like, well, you got divorced now. You're a real operator.
Exactly right. So, yeah. So,
but it's time, man.
So talk about the pivot to videos and to
it's time. That kind of communication. It's these young kids, these young men and women, they don't have time to go to a union meeting.
Right.
They're coaching their kids' games. They're running people all over the place. Yeah. They're working till 8 o'clock at night. They're taking care of their mom and their elderly mom. I mean, people are so busy now.
Yeah.
So I figured out that early that I had to get, if I wanted to be really informed,
yeah,
other than the diehard, you know, activists that are going to come to the meetings, right? I wanted to make sure to get the messages to the people that maybe don't have time to come to meetings or aren't going to come to meetings. So I got to get it to them on their terms. And so it's a video that I do every month.
So you record it?
Yep.
Okay.
I record it, and it's the same message that I give at our big union meeting every month. Same message.
But different every month.
Different every month.
So is it once a month?
Yep.
Okay.
So I put it on video, and we put it in a protected members only area,
right?
Which also allows us to engages members to get in this area, right?
Yeah. Like, yep.
Like, yeah, they start going to the website now because they want to see these videos.
Yep.
Smart. Yeah.
So
I'm taking notes over here.
It's been really popular. Like, everywhere I go in the union, like, hey, I watched your video. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You know, but they do.
Yeah, which means they broke into your firewall and somehow became a member.
No, I mean, members say that when I go.
No, I know.
Yeah. Listen, I get calls, you know, obviously you guys are a big part of the MCL. And for those of you that don't know this, Jason George is a board member of the MCL, right? Took over for Mr. Jim Sweeney when he was promoted up into the international. And your members call, you know, they're really engaged with the MCL, like really engaged. And when we have an open enrollment, for example, for, let's just say, life insurance, your participation numbers are probably number 1, 2, or 3. Carpenters are also hugely engaged. Hugely engaged, as are the sprinkler fitters.
Yeah.
But for a, you know, especially, well, both of you guys, right? Locals of your size, to have that kind of participation, is number one, is wonderful. Number two, it means you're doing something right. Number three, when I get calls, right, because I always shoot the breeze with your members, and they like talking. Some of them love. Some of them can talk forever. Like, Ken, you want to come ice fishing with me? No. Is it cold? Like, no, I don't want to go ice fishing with you, but I appreciate the offer. You know who does? Jason wants to go ice fishing with you. And they're like, oh, I love that guy. I see his videos. You know, but they all talk about your videos, right? And they think it's like... and the older folks as well. They love it, right? The retirees that can't make it, the ones that are in Florida or Arizona, right, they're still listening to it. Yep. You know, so I think it's really, really cool what you're doing. Do you know, like, the percentage of your folks that are, like, opening the email, listening to it? Like, do you have stats on that?
For emails, we do a lot of the emails. We have an extensive list of almost all of our members have signed up for our emails, so we have them all.
Oh,
so awesome. It's like a 40% open rate, which is, like, unheard of in the industry, right? Like,
yeah.
So they're paying attention to it.
Yeah.
It's over 1,000 people a month watch the videos.
It's fantastic.
Members.
And then they talk about it on the job site, right? Because I know I've talked to some of your members will call and they'll be like, okay, I'm putting you on speakerphone. I got Joe and I got Jim and they're sitting in a truck. And can you
they
explain
do that to me?
You better be on your game.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's awesome. So good for you.
Yeah, I mean, to the point you made earlier, you can wish for people to come to union meetings all you want. But if they don't come, do you want them to have some information? Is a video, is something better than not coming to the meeting and just not getting any of that important message?
Try to meet them where they're at.
Right.
Or the alternative to that is not.
Right.
And then they're not going to get it.
And right? I think that's kind of the rule right now. What you're doing is maybe a little bit more the exception to the rule.
No, it's the exception.
Yeah, for sure. It's the way to go, though.
Listen, I mean, it's risky, right? Like, you know, as a union leader, you put stuff on tape. You know, you say stuff, and you know, there's always elements of every democracy of rabble rousers that want to, like, you know, nitpick at what you're doing, right? Yeah. So you're
use your words against you,
right? Yeah. You're putting it on tape and you're putting it out there, but, like, you know, it's just basic information about what's going on with the union. You know, it's not top secret stuff. It's the stuff we go over at the union meetings. And you know, as long as you just tell the truth, you got nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, right? So I always used to say when I was organizing or in a, you know, like having a meeting or whatever, I would say to the guys and gals, everything I say in this room, I completely expect to go back to management.
Right.
I assume that one of you here is going to go right back to management. I assume one of you here is probably recording this thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. So you're kind of, you know, you're committed to it. It's forever, right? It's on. It's on video, right? And you know, that's what I think some union leaders are reticent to do,
for sure,
because they're worried that, like, they're going to say something wrong or whatever. But you know what? That's why you record it. That's why you have lawyers, right? That's why you vet it. Like you said, if you just tell the truth is what it is.
It is what it is, and you know, the members are understood. If you're just telling the truth, you're speaking your mind.
Right.
If you say something wrong or you get something wrong, they're not gonna hold you. You know, they get it.
Yeah. And then you guys do, you know, like I've seen a bunch of, like, today's Capitol Day, right? We're all going to go to the Capitol and we're going to lobby and we're going to do this. And you come there and get a jacket. Like, your participation is what? It's pretty good, right?
Yeah, 400 or 500 people that go to the Capitol every year, and we give them a jacket. Yeah. You know, we're all dressed the same. And, you know, at our Capitol, it's not the biggest Capitol in the world. So, like, that many people, like, everybody's like, oh my God, the 49ers are taking over the Capitol. You know?
I love it.
They're everywhere. They're just hanging out. It's pretty cool. So it definitely makes an impact to do that. And they like doing it. We actually get really good participation from not just the Twin Cities. So there'll be people that bus in from northern Minnesota, southern Minnesota, all over the place.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So
and then
great.
Do you do the same in the Dakotas?
No, we're not. We will at some point.
Yeah.
We're not as politically active in the Dakotas. They have a long history of being anti-union in the Dakotas.
That's for sure.
Yes.
Both North and South Dakota were either the first or second or one of the top first four or five states to go right to work when it was legalized.
Yep.
So there's a long history there. We are making some inroads. It'll be interesting, though, because it'll be it's just dominated by the Republican Party. Like,
which, by the way,
is fine.
Isn't always necessarily a bad thing.
No.
Everybody's like, oh, it's the worst thing in the world. No, it's not. You know, if you play both sides and you play it right and you stick to the issues, you can find that, you know, Republicans will go for workers' rights.
They will, and we've seen it in Minnesota. We made a real point to educate Republicans in Minnesota. We bring them to our training center. We've had all of them through. Three of the four Republican congressmen in Minnesota are Davis-Bacon Republicans.
That's huge.
Yeah.
The Republican leadership in Minnesota supports what we do.
So there are so many Republicans.
Explain that for a second. I'm sorry. Yeah. When Jason says Davis-Bacon Republicans, Ed, what does that mean?
The Davis-Bacon Act is a federal prevailing wage law. Prevailing wage, we've talked about on the show a number of times, and that's, you know, it's like a minimum wage for workers. It protects sort of the middle class, the labor markets in a local area, so people can't just come in from low-wage states and undercut it. So it's something that really should be bipartisan. I think originally Davis-Bacon came from two New York a New York congressman and a New York senator that were both Republicans.
That's right. Yep.
But yeah, I mean, there to your point about Davis-Bacon Republicans, there are Republicans, and I mean, probably half of any building trades union or more vote Republican. And there are Republican lawmakers out there that support the things that help union members. So if unions are out there saying Republicans are bad, what's the likelihood those folks are going to continue to support these things if there's no incentive, if they're not getting any support, if they're not being engaged? So, I mean, a bipartisan political game for any union is important because you have to recognize that's where your members are. Your members are not all in one party or the other.
All right.
And you have to, I mean, you have to sort of thread that needle pretty carefully, right?
Yes.
Because you can't go Republican bad, Democrat good. You know, that's not our
members.
You do that, man.
You're done.
That's right.
You have no credibility with them. And it doesn't matter how much literature you put out. Mm-hmm. They're not going to ignore all of it.
Agreed.
So when I talk to them about a Democrat, now, actually, this is how the Democrats get mad, right? Like, well, what are you doing talking to these Republicans? Because they're so used to us, you know, that's what we do.
The labor movement.
Right.
Yes.
And I'm like, listen, first of all, I don't work for you.
That's right.
I work for the membership, and that's where they're at.
Yeah.
So you go convince them, not my job, yours.
Yeah, I like it.
Go do stuff for them so
that's
they come
right.
back to the Democratic Party if you want them to vote for you, right?
Oh,
not my deal.
Good for you.
But also I tell them, like, look, if our bipartisanship actually helps you, because when we put our name on a Democrat now, the members will actually take a look at them,
sure.
even our Republican members, because they know that we're not slanted.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. When you see these, look, you know, especially here in Chicago, I'll get a list from whatever it is, and it'll be 47 Dems.
Right.
Not a single Republican. I'm like, why don't you just send me a tiny postcard that says D, right?
Yeah.
You don't need to list all of them. Just say D. It's just like, this is a waste of paper. And I get 35 of those, right? But when you get something from 150, you know, the operators of the building trades, it's a mixer of both. And like you said, we have training sites and we have, you know, prevailing wage and we have, you know, our issues, right? And that's important. I do think that, you know, that playing both sides is smart. Will you do me a favor? Will you stick around for another segment?
I'm here.
All right. You ain't going anywhere?
Nope. I'm good.
You want to go back to Minnesota?
I love Chicago.
All right, listen, we will be right back with more of the Workers Mic and Jason George right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic on 720 WGN. I'm Phil Davidson here with Ed and Ken, and we are wrapping up the show with our friend Jason George.
Thanks for sticking around.
Sticking around for
Absolutely.
The news.
Yeah, the news.
News of the week.
News you can use.
That's right.
Hey, real quick, Jason, we didn't get to this, but I want to talk about it because of where you're from. You guys have pipeline work up there, right?
Yeah, we have six major oil pipelines running through Minnesota, North Dakota area from Canada, and then also a bunch of natural gas, and we're trying to build carbon capture pipelines.
What is that?
They take, I'm getting dangerous here, I'm not a scientist,
That's
but
okay.
they take carbon from the fumes of the ethanol plants, they put them in a pipe, and they put them underground in North Dakota. And apparently, North Dakota is the best place in the world to put carbon in the ground. So we're blessed, and all of them are going to come through our neighborhood. So
and that's they're building those pipelines,
including here in Illinois. Like
really?
Some of the ethanol plants in Illinois are part
so
of this.
So explain real quick. What does a pipeliner do? They follow the work, right?
Yep, they go wherever they're putting pipe in the ground. Natural gas, oil, it doesn't matter what's going through it.
Those are and that is you know if you ever met a pipeliner, I mean that's blood money, right? And those guys they're different. Animal, right? They travel. Some of them sleep in the car. Some of them will shack up in hotels with a bunch of guys at the same time.
I know a pipeliner who had eight ex-wives. He was on wife number nine, who actually was also wife number seven or wife number six.
Yeah. Wow.
I've seen that, too.
A lot of ex-wives.
Are they generally operators, pipeliners?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. A lot of operators. But we also have an operator local out of Indiana that does the nuclear density testing on these pipelines called Local 112.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there. Holy, you can see the equipment.
It's like a university.
Unbelievable.
It's a whole different world. I currently have 49ers hanging off the side of a mountain in West Virginia building the pipeline. Those pictures are insane.
Really?
Yeah, that's crazy.
So for these, I don't know, we'll call them environmentalists, whatever. It's like, stop the pipeline. Well, number one, let's figure out a way to replace it. Number two, that is tens of thousands of hundreds of thousands of jobs for our members, like, don't just say stop the pipeline.
Well, you not know, to mention you're capturing carbon. Yeah, like, on the one hand, you are saving the environment.
Right. Or guess what? Stop it, but then replace it with wind, solar, this, that. Don't just go stop the pipeline.
And
right?
And if hydrogen energy becomes a thing, you know, they're talking about that being the next wave, that would travel, like in a city like Chicago, it would travel through the same pipes they use for natural gas right now.
So we still need pipes.
So the infrastructure is there to help build it.
We're always going to need pipes. We're going to need natural gas, oil, and the things that they hate for the next 50 years. They know it. Everybody knows it. These people are pretty much frauds that, you know, are pushing this agenda for their own purposes. They're getting paid to do it. It's all, you know, it's all part of the game, right?
Like banning gas stoves here in Chicago.
Right? That's right.
Right. How ridiculous is that?
It's dumb. But they're well-funded, and they're well-organized, and they're hard to beat. And we just put a major oil pipeline. Well, get this. They were opposed to, we have eight major oil pipelines. We replaced a 60-year-old pipeline, not a new one.
Right.
Just rebuilding an existing one that's 60 years old.
Right.
Dead set against it.
So, I mean, that's like what we got going on here in Chicago.
That's the logic.
We're replacing all of our utilities. It's like, oh, yeah, it has to stop. Can't do that anymore.
We should do like Mr. Burns and block out the sun.
There you go.
And then just while you're here, Jason, you comment on... feel free to comment on Teamsters, Pepsi. They're on strike, right? Yeah, oh, they have authorized a strike?
I think 85% of their members or 95% of their members authorized a strike. These are 800 workers with the Teamsters Local 727 who bottle, ship, warehouse,
who
deliver.
Just joined
all
the MCL.
These...
We'd love to have them come on and talk about this too.
Right.
But, like, you know, don't buy Pepsi right now, right? Like, you know,
Pepsi isn't doing right by their workers.
And it's the same thing with Molson Coors, correct?
Yeah, in Texas.
But once again, you know, like you tell me, Jason, how it was up by you. But, you know, when the Bud Light thing happened, right? Everybody's like, oh, I'm not drinking Bud Light. You know, God forbid it should be a worker issue.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why can't we have the same energy, you know, for a worker's issue? What do you think?
Well, first of all, I like to tease my Teamsters buddies. I'm good friends with the Teamsters in Minnesota. I always joke with them, is there a place where you aren't on strike right now?
Yeah.
Is there anything? Is that can go anywhere?
That's a good point.
But, seems to be working for them.
You know, they're in a different situation than us a little bit because, you know, they were taking concessions and wage cuts for a long time.
Yeah.
Like they need to go do this to catch up, and this is what they got to do.
I think
we should support them because you know what the people don't hear. Oh, they get 20%. How could they get that much? Well, they don't hear about like the 20 years where they got nothing.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're catching up, and then it's unfortunate that these companies don't respect that.
Yeah.
They should just pay them now. I don't know why they got to do this, but that's what they got to do.
Well, so they're not making record profits since COVID, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, right? Like, you know, they're not jacking up the price of everything, which everything has gotten more expensive. Shrinkflation, like the Coke bottle got smaller, the Pepsi bottle got smaller or whatever. So, yeah, I agree with you. Like, they're
putting less chips in the bag, Ken.
That's ridiculous.
I open up the bag, there's no chips in there.
Well, that's just your bag.
Oh, yeah, because I ate most of them.
But anyway, listen.
At home bottom.
We got I could talk about this stuff forever. Jason, thank you so much for coming
the
way down. It's really
awesome,
really cool of you to come. We will be back next week with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of the Workers' Mic was powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial. For additional information and podcasts of the Workers' Mic, visit WGNRadio.com.